Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. We're talking about part 2, chapter 16 of Anna Karenina. Did Oblonsky get a bad deal, or was Levin just grumpy? Does Levin want another shot with Kitty, or is he done with her? I Am Norwegian said he was pleased by what he found out, and even more pleased that the person who had made him suffer so much was suffering herself. I think Levin wants another shot. His involuntary pleasure implies to me that he still cares more than he realizes. I don't know why, but I feel like if he didn't care at all anymore, he'd just think, poor girl. Dolly should have had Fyodor there to explain Ryabinin's mannerisms and body language like he did with the Willow of Wisp guy, and things would have gone much better. I'm sure Oblonsky went in with the assumption that Ryabinin was something of a country bumpkin, at least that was what I assumed. But he came across as shrewd. And Levin, who actually understands these people and the process. Levin at least avert the attempt at haggling further. Yeah, I think Levin, even though he was annoyed that that Oblonsky was getting a raw deal, I think he still even saved him some money, because the guy was going to try to bargain him down at the last minute as they were signing the deeds, or, you know, as they were sealing the deal. So at least Levin was able to save him that money, but he was still getting ripped off, I reckon. Techrific said, I think he did get a bad deal, and Levin took offence. A speculator devaluing the land in Levin's parts is a bad thing in Levin's mind. Those lands were hard fought for, and tending to them entails much toil and worry. Not all land owners are wealthy in the Moscow or St. Petersburg sense, and there's much pride and tradition and history attached to the lands. Sure, we can have an argument about the land-owning aristocracy and the right and wrongs of that, but I think we have to see where Levin is coming from. The speculator is the only profit in Dolly's forest, and Stever only money to spend on frivolous activities. Levin is not wrong in frowning upon that. His sense of home, tradition, and love of the land is attacked by a capitalist and a frivolous man, although he still seems to like Stever. I imagine he has nothing but contempt for the speculator. True, I didn't think of that. Also, if someone's selling a bunch of land at a way too little price in your home area, that's probably dragging down the prices of the real estate, including your own real estate in that area, right? Because sales are basically typically priced based on current or recent sales. So if a bunch of land goes for real cheap, then it tends to dictate the market a little bit. Swim said, the mama fishy said, it's interesting to me that Tolstoy characterizes Stever, when we first meet him, as a very good and conscientious at his bureaucratic job, and then in this chapter it is obvious to me that he doesn't know a thing about selling forests, and is being swindled, and does not listen to Levin, who knows about this stuff. Levin rightly points out to Stever that he would listen to Stever about city things, because he doesn't know much about that stuff, and conversely Stever should listen to him about country things. Stever brushes him off. I laughed at Levin's serves her right initial reaction, so true to life. Stever and Dolly are going to end up like the Rostovs in War and Peace, completely in debt. Stever is selling assets like mad and at bad prices, double insult, it is Dolly's inheritance, to support his prolific lifestyle, poor Dolly. Sluggy with 3 G's said, I thought Levin's reactions to Kitty's illness felt so true to life. He obviously still cares for her, but couldn't help feeling a little glad that the person who hurt him so deeply was now experiencing some pain. If he didn't really care for her anymore, I think his reaction would be closer to ambivalence. It also emphasizes his humanity even more. It wouldn't have felt so real if he immediately tossed his feelings aside and was overwhelmed with concern for Kitty. My favourite part of this chapter was Levin arguing with the merchant and offering to buy the wood instead. It should have been a red flag to Stever that the merchant immediately dropped his argument to him to lower the price after this, but as we have seen, Stever is always looking for the easiest path in whatever he is doing in life. Nifty Riffix said, my opinion is influenced by modern acceptable dating standards, of course, but I think Levin finding any delight in news that Kitty is suffering because he deems her responsible for his suffering is sort of lame. It didn't make me laugh. I'd say that I scoffed because he doesn't acknowledge how his previous behaviour ultimately led to Kitty's rejection of his proposal. He had hung around the Shabatsky's home in pursuit of her, his intention being merely interfered. And he abruptly leaves one day, and of course the other suitors would come along. Isn't it funny, too, that when you yourself are in this sort of mood, it really affects your feelings about these characters? And I just couldn't get out of this funk today, so I just channeled that into general irritation towards Levin. I usually like him, by the way. He is genuine in a totally enriching way, but just not today. Well, that's no good. Nifty-rific to hear that you're not feeling good today. I hope you feel better. Levin's emotional, you know, he said his feelings hurt. And also, his mistakes he made in pursuing Kitty were, he didn't handle it well, but I suppose when you're interested in someone, it can cloud your judgment a little bit. You can get a bit over eager and do silly things like linger around. Let's move on, shall we, and read chapter 17. It goes like this. Oblonsky went upstairs, his pockets bulging with the treasury bills payable in 3 months' time with which Ryabinin had paid him. The forest transaction was completed. He had the money in his pocket. The shooting had been fine. Oblonsky was in the best of spirits, and therefore all the more anxious to dispel Levin's ill humour. He wanted to finish the day at supper as pleasantly as he had begun it. Levin really was in a bad humour, and in spite of his desire to behave kindly and amiably to his charming guest, he could not master himself. The intoxication of the news that Kitty was not married was beginning, little by little, to take effect on him. Kitty was unmarried and ill for love of the man who had slighted her. This insult seemed to fall upon him. Vronsky had slighted her, and she had slighted him, Levin. Consequently, Vronsky had a right to despise him, and was therefore his enemy. But Levin did not think all this. He dimly felt that there was something insulting him in the affair, and was angry not with what had upset him, but with everything that presented itself to him. The stupid sale of the forest, the swindle Oblonsky had fallen prey to, which had been perpetrated in his house, irritated him. "Well, have you finished?" he said when he met Oblonsky upstairs. "Will you have some supper?" I won't say no. What an appetite I get in the country. Wonderful. Why did you not offer Rabin and something to eat?" "Let him go to the devil." "Well, really, how you treat him," said Oblonsky. "You did not even give him your hand. Why not shake hands with him?" "Because I do not shake hands with the footman, and the footman is 100 times better than he." "What a reactionary you really are." "What about merging the classes?" said Oblonsky. "Let those who like it merge to their heart's content, but it sickens me." "I see you are quite a reactionary." "I have really never considered what I am. I am Konstantin Levin, that's all." "And Konstantin Levin is in a very bad temper," said Oblonsky, smiling. "Yes, I am in a bad temper, and do you know why? Because, excuse me, of your stupid sale." Oblonsky wrinkled his face good-naturedly, like an innocent man who was being hurt and interfered with. "Oh, don't," he said. "When has a man ever sold anything without being told immediately after that it was worth much more? But while he is trying to sell, nobody offers him more. No, I see you have a grudge against that unfortunate Rybinin." "Maybe I have. And do you know why? You will again call me a reactionary or some other dreadful name, but all the same it vexes and hurts me to see on all sides the impoverishment of the noblesse, to which I too belong, and to which, in spite of the merging of the classes, I am very glad to belong. And impoverished not from extravagance, that would not matter so much. To spend like a nobleman is their business, only the noblesse know how to do it. At present, the peasants around here are buying land. That does not pain me. The squire does nothing, the peasant works and squeezes out the idler. That is as it should be, and I am very glad on the peasant's account, but it hurts me to see this impoverishment as a result of, shall I call it, simplicity. Here, A Polish leaseholder buys for half its value at the splendid estate of a lady who lives in Nice. Their land that is worth 10 rubles a desyatina is leased to the merchant for 1 ruble. And now you, without any reason, have presented that scamp with 30,000 rubles. Then what do you want? Is one to count every tree? Certainly count them. You have not counted them, but Ryabinin has. Ryabinin's children will have the means to live and get an education, while yours may not have. Well, forgive me, but there is something petty in all this counting. We have our occupation, and they have theirs, and they have to make a profit. Anyway, the thing is done, and there's an end to it. And here come the fried eggs, just the way I like them best. And Agatha Mikhailovna will give us some of that excellent herb brandy. Oblonsky sat down to table and began joking with Agatha Mikhailovna, assuring her that it was long since he had had such a dinner and supper as that day. "Well, you appreciate it at least," said Agatha Mikhailovna, "but Konstantin Dmitrich, whatever one gives him, if it were only a crust of bread, would just eat it and go away." "Well, you appreciate it at least," sorry, I should have said. "Well, you appreciate it at least," said Agatha Mikhailovna, "but Konstantin Dmitrich, whatever one gives him, if it were only a crust of bread, would just eat it and go away." Try as Levin would to control himself, he remained morose and silent. There was one question he wanted to put to Oblonsky, but could not bring himself to ask, nor could he find the form to put it in, or the moment to ask it. When Oblonsky had gone down to his room, and after again washing, had put on his frilled nightshirt and gone to bed, Levin still lingered in his room, talking about various trifles, and unable to ask what he wanted to know. "What wonderful soap they make," he said, examining and unwrapping a cake of scented soap Agatha Mikhailovna had prepared for the visitor, but which Oblonsky had not used. "Just look, it is quite a work of art." "Yes, yes, there are all sorts of improvements in everything now," said Oblonsky, with a moist and beautiful yawn. "In the theatres, for instance, and all places of amusement." "Oh, oh, oh," he yawned. "Electric light everywhere. Oh, oh." "Yes, electric light," said Levin. "Yes, by the way, where is Vronsky now?" he asked, suddenly putting down the soap. "Vronsky," said Oblonsky, ceasing to yawn. "He is in Petersburg. He left soon after you did, and has not been in Moscow once since then. And do you know, Konstantin, I will tell you quite frankly," he said, leaning his elbow on the table by his bed and supporting on his hand his good-looking rosy face with its glittering kind and sleepy eyes. "It was your own fault. You were frightened of a rival, but as I told you then, I do not know who had the better chance. Why did you not make a dash for it? I told you at the time that..." He yawned, but only with his jaw, without opening his mouth. "Does he or does he not know that I proposed?" thought Levin, looking at him. "Yes, there is something sly and diplomatic in his face," and feeling himself blush, he gazed in silence straight into Oblonsky's eyes. If there was anything on her side at that time, it was only the external attraction, continued Oblonsky. "You know, his being a perfect aristocrat and his future positions in society had an effect, not on her, but on her mother." Levin frowned. The insult of the refusal he had had to face burned in his heart like a fresh, newly received wound. But he was at home, and the walls of home are helpful. "Wait, wait," he began, interrupting Oblonsky. "You talk of his being an aristocrat, but I should like to ask you, what is Vronsky's, or anyone else's, aristocracy, that I should be slighted because of it? You consider Vronsky an aristocrat? I don't. A man whose father crawled up from nothing by intrigues and whose mother has had relations with heavens knows whom. No, pardon me, I consider myself and people like me aristocrats, people who can point back to 3 or 4 honourable generations of their family, all with a higher standard of education, talent and intelligence are a different matter, who have never cringed before anyone, never depended on anyone, but have lived as my father and my grandfather did. I know many such. You consider it mean for me to count the trees in my wood while you give Ryabinin and 30,000 rubles, but you will receive a government grant, and I do not know what other rewards, and I shan't, so I value what is mine by birth and labour. We, and not those who only manage to exist by the bounty of the mighty of this world, and who can be bought for a piece of silver are the aristocrats. But whom are you driving at? I agree with you, said Oblonsky sincerely and cheerfully, though he felt that Levin ranked him with those who could be bought with silver for silver. Levin's vehemence sincerely pleased him. Whom are you driving at? Though much of what you say is not true of Vronsky, I am not speaking about that. I want to tell you candidly that if I were you, I'd come to Moscow now with me and... No, I don't know if you knew it or not, and I don't care, but I will tell you. I proposed and was refused, and your sister-in-law, Catherine Alexandrovna, is now only a painful and humiliating memory to me. What? Why? What nonsense? But don't let us talk about it. Forgive me, please, if I have been rude to you, said Levin. Now that he had spoken out, he became once more as he had been in the morning. You are not angry with me, Stiva. Please don't be angry, he said, smiling, and took his hand. Oh, no, not at all. There was nothing to be angry about. I am glad we have had this explanation. And do you know, the shooting in the early morning is often very good. Should we not go? I would not sleep again after it, but go straight from there to the station. A capital idea. All right, there we go. Another chapter down. Have your say over at the subreddit. Thank you very much for listening, and I will see you tomorrow.